Walk out of the building.
No, but okay. Seriously, before we start, we should have like some list of a few basic things, because I'm not sure I have anything.
Okay, here's what I got. Your talk at Ordev, the election, upcoming model elections.
Yeah, model elections, that's good.
There's always stuff to talk about there. Dave is coming on later to talk about the gaming game. Gaming game.
Right, the
Skyrim versus... Call O Duty. Duty. And we're going to take all the questions from the audience. That's going to be Alex's major accomplishment today, is he's going to figure out how to get at least one person from the live audience to somehow Skype into this call and ask a question.
Ooh, that sounds risky. Okay, and the other thing is I have to finish at like 10.
That's
like,
okay, because so we have nothing to talk about.
This should maybe be a shorter usual podcast. That would be good.
Yeah. No problemo.
Because I have just 1 hour to pack all my crap up.
Yeah, and this is my normal lunch period anyway. Well, we can talk about packing for an international trip.
Okay, that's good. You might have some good advice there.
Packing for...
I remember I asked on the fake travel site about that. Or you told me it was fake.
biztravel.stackexchange.com.
No, the old Stack Exchange 1.0 travel site that wasn't really real.
Oh, yeah, that was the one that I made.
Yes.
You know the deal.
It was called
Biz Travel. Pull it up.
Are we,
we're ready to go whenever you're ready.
All right, go ahead. Just put us, you can put us live. All right. Let's see. Okay.
Are we live? Are we recording?
I mean, we are recording, and just as we get started, this is going to be kind of a again, should I go with cold start or warm start when it's like a warm up kind of? It takes forever to get started. Right. Warm start.
Just start. Remember, it's better to have a rolling start.
rolling start. Wait, Punyon.
We're live, everyone.
Punyon is making quotation marks there.
Hopefully, this works this week. We changed up all the hardware, so hopefully, there's no robots because it's all like analog to the digital interfaces.
Okay. Now.
And things.
Now, I just need to tweet to say that we're okay. We're live. s.tk/livestream
PR.
And you can what's the short URL for chatting?
Live chat.
We will be taking questions from the audience today. You see, because our special guest who is supposed to be on this week had a schedule conflict with our schedule conflict. We had a bigger schedule conflict than he did.
Yeah, it's my fault. It's okay.
That's all right.
He'll be back. He'll be back.
I blame the Scandinavian Air Service.
I have a question about TK. So what is TK? What top level domain is TK?
I believe it's that.
Oh, God. It's like Tuklau. It's a province. I don't know how to pronounce it,
but
it's
Tuklau Islands or something?
Yeah, it's a province in New Zealand.
It's a little tiny island that is a territory of New Zealand.
Yeah, Joel should know all about it.
It's not like Libya or something else, kind of quasi-evil, right?
No.
It's not like Libya or
Although,
Syria.
Although, according to Wikipedia, it is used for, like, spam and viruses. Because they give them... So the way it works is that anyone can actually get a .tk domain for free. And because they want it to be, like, the short URL for everyone, so you could get, like, jeff.tk... But if you want, like, super premium ones, which are less than, you know, fewer than 3 characters or anything that's a trademarked brand, you have to pay for it.
I see. And we have s.tk?
Yep.
Okay, that's pretty sweet.
Okay, we need to tell the people that Moot has been delayed. Been delayed by 2 weeks.
Yes, 2 weeks.
So if you were here for him...
3 weeks? Yes.
Three, including this one.
So if you are here
21
for
days
him,
from today, he will be on.
No, I thought 2 weeks.
Oh.
Oh, really?
Dave is next week.
Yeah, and then we have a blank week.
Well, yeah, I wasn't sure if you wanted to do one because it's Thanksgiving week, so we can decide if we're doing one or not. And then that week after Thanksgiving, Moot.
4chan.
This isn't actually going on the podcast, right?
This is where
the most boring podcast
ever. I mean, this is recording. We're going live to the chat room.
It's a podcast. It's fun.
Okay, I'm just trying to warm up the Twitter. And by the way, if you were for the 15 people that are actually watching this live right now, we don't really have a topic for this because we sort of you know, threw this together at the last minute, so we don't have that much to talk about. So if you have something to talk about, go in the chat room and start saying, "I would like to talk about X," and then get your Skype ready, and we'll call you.
Yeah, put your Skype in there too.
Put your Skype name in there and so forth, and we'll try to get somebody live from the live studio audience. As if this is just a radio call-in show, you'll be obliged to say, "Long-time listener, first-time caller, love your show," at the beginning. So, Jeff, you're packing up to go on a trip.
Yes. So you had international trip recommendations, Joel.
Oh, yeah. Well, so first of all, I need to know what airline you're taking and all that kind of stuff, where you're changing planes. You're going to Malmo, so that means you're probably flying to Copenhagen.
Yeah, that's right. And I go through London.
Yeah. That's a good choice.
What airline?
British, I hope.
I think British Airways.
That is a good way to do it, because if you're arriving at Terminal 5 and leaving at Terminal 5, you're going to be a very happy camper.
Yeah, it's British. It is Terminal 5.
Okay.
It is British Airways Terminal 5.
That's what I would have recommended.
Okay. Well, travel experts in Malmo hook this up, so.
Yeah.
Clearly they meet your bar for being travel experts.
Yeah, but they don't meet the bar for loyalty to their own nation's airline, but that's okay.
Well, to me, the important thing is that I get there and, you know, able to.
Yeah. And you're giving a talk. So Uradev is, Ura is the body of water in between Copenhagen and Malmo, I guess, or something like that, which are connected by the world's largest bridge between Denmark and whatever it's called. Let's go with Sweden. And so the whole regional area has this regional software developer conference called Uradev, which is awesome. And Uladev would mean developers drinking beer in any of those Scandinavian languages, but it's not that. It's not beer. It's Ura. Also eels, apparently. They have the same word for eel and beer. You have to know from context, because sometimes you will find yourself eating, because they do eat eels in Scandinavia.
So, Joel, I have a question.
Yeah.
What's the currency there? Is it kronor? Is that correct?
Yes, and they have a different kind of kronor for both countries you're going to. They each have their own kronor country.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
No. The Scandinavians were smart and did not get into that scam.
Yeah, I guess I'm guessing they're kind of pretty happy about that decision right now.
They sure are. Yeah.
So how much kronor do you think I'll need?
Okay, so here's the trick. Well, actually, how are you getting from the airport to Malmo?
Well, I'm going to take they recommend taking the train.
Okay.
They said definitely take the train.
Definitely.
And actually,
take the train.
I do want to complain again, because we had way back when we have dev days in London back in the day.
Yeah.
I made that mistake of taking the cab, which was like literally $120 to get from the airport to where the heck it was.
And they used up all your money.
And Joel, you know, apparently Joel had told me, I don't remember this, but Joel had told me to take the train. So
I told somebody.
I'm not repeating that mistake, because they said don't take the cab. It'll be 4 times as long.
The train is super awesome. However, you will get there. You'll get to the train station. The train station is right in the arrivals. You get in the arrivals at the airport at Kastrup, which is the Copenhagen airport, and then you just go downstairs, and that's the train station. Or actually, you go not even downstairs. You just go to the north part of the airport, and there's a train station right there. And here's the trick. There's a whole bunch of ATM machines that'll sell you tickets, and you're like, oh, this is an awesome idea. I'll go to the ATM machine, no line. And you get to the ATM machines, and they don't take American credit cards,
which
is my favorite question on, it has to be a chip and pin credit card, which we Americans don't have. That was my famous question on money.stackexchange. The only way to get a chip and pin card is to buy this expensive prepaid thing from TravelX. But you can use an American credit card if you just go to the counter and buy a ticket. So you're going to have to go go straight to the line and say, I need a ticket to Malmo. I guess you can just get a ticket directly to Malmo. Yeah.
Using my stupid, insecure American credit card.
Right.
I am bitter about that, because having read about that, the chip and pin system
does seem a little bit superior.
Yeah.
It's just, it costs like an extra penny.
The fact that we don't have it is just really lame. The
problem in America is that they don't want to replace the terminals that all the merchants have. Like, they all have these crazy, like every dry cleaner you go into in the States has this terminal that they got in 1975 with a 130 baud modem in it or something. Uses the phone line to dial up and
every single time they swipe a credit card.
Yeah.
Our children's children will be able to have
chip and pin.
Something nice like that.
They might whatever the next generation is, they might skip straight forward to that. There's this thing, have you heard about this thing where you just walk into a restaurant with your phone And then you just say, I'm the guy that just walked in with a special payment option, and they give you stuff?
Well, just paying with your phone, sort
well,
of.
Well, there's several things. Have to there's, like, your phone. There's like NFC, which is like what Google Wallet's doing.
Yeah.
But then there's also, I know this like Square has a thing set up where if you have Square and, you know, the store takes it, you can like basically be like, oh, here's my credit card. And then you walk up to the cashier, you're like, yeah, I'm the guy who just like hit that. And they're like, oh, yeah, there you go. Your payment's done.
You know, I have to plug this famous IBM commercial. I don't know if you guys remember this. This was, gosh, back in the first .com era. But it's sort of a shifty-looking guy walks into a store. He's in a trench coat. He looks a little bit like one of those baddies from The Matrix. He's just grabbing stuff and putting it in his jacket, eating it, drinking it. And he just walks out without paying. And then the security guy stops him. And you think it's going to be like a big security thing. And he's like, oh, here's your receipt. Because it was all automatic, you see. Yeah. Like as he... As that's he picked up the stuff, he just magically paid for it. It's like, this is the future. It was pretty cool, actually.
That's kind of what the Apple Store is like.
They did just launch their new like app where you can just order. You can like order it through your iPhone, you know, whatever you want on through your iPhone, and then it's ready 12 minutes later.
Yeah,
and you just walk in.
But they
and
were
sign
saying
for
you
it.
Just walk in. I don't even know if you sign for it. I think you walk in and you take it.
No, you have to sign for it.
Okay. All right. So that must
you
be
should
why
try that, Joel. Joel, you should try that. Just walk into the Apple Store and start taking things.
Just walk out. This is the future. I was told this was the future.
I bought it on the internet.
That's right. So, going back to travel recommendations, as far as like what stuff I should take, this is only a 4-day trip, so it's not like I need to pack.
That's true, but it is pretty cold there.
Yes, and, I'm bringing my heavy jacket.
There's no, if I remember, Oradev, if it's still at the same convention center it was when I held it, it's kind of a walk from the convention center to the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of cold there, and you want to walk because it's like it's fun. It's like, hey, I'll walk, I'll check out this little town, even though it's kind of an industrial part of it. But you will be outdoors more than you'd think. So get some pretty warm clothes.
Nothing could be colder. That the coldest I've been was we went to Montreal for CUSEC.
Oh yeah, CUSEC. Yeah, the Canadian
and
students.
It was like unnaturally warm. We're like, wow, it's cold. And they're like, no, this is unnaturally warm.
Right.
This is unbelievably warm.
Right.
And then
it's
the
only
last
minus 100.
Last day or two it got really cold and it was just bitterly cold. It was just brutal to be outside. I had forgotten. I don't think I'd ever been in cold like that, frankly.
Right, I don't think
it was debilitating to be outside.
That is, to be fair, CUSEC in Montreal or whatever it was, Toronto, who the hell cares? One of those places was the coldest I've ever been in my life.
Were you too? It was so cold.
Yeah, I remember. I had to go out. I don't remember why I had to go out. I had to go to a tailor for some reason. Like I might have like not had.
Did you have to get a tuxedo at the last minute?
I had to go to a tailor, and everything else in Montreal you could get to through the little underground tunnel, you know, the little termite leftover thing that they have, the termite people, and like you don't have to go above ground for a lot of the retail areas, but the tailor I had to go out for one block, and I just remember my eyes freezing, like feeling like oh shit, if I don't put my hands over my eyeballs, they will freeze into little ice cubes.
Yes, it was physically debilitating to be walking down the street. It was just shockingly cold. And we were just spoiled because when we got there, like I said, it was really warm. We didn't know. We're like, wow, this is cold. But they're like, no, this is not cold.
Yeah.
Hopefully it won't be that cold is my point.
I don't think it's quite that cold.
It will be. The forecast's fairly reasonable. I did check on the internets and it seems cold, but not bitterly so.
Right.
As far as power adapters, Joel, anything? Say there.
So you're gonna. What you need is the little thing that has the two round plugs for Europe. It's sort of two cylindrical plugs that are horizontally arranged, as opposed to the two flat ones that we have.
I have the UK one and I have the New Zealand one. Those aren't gonna work.
Nope.
Nope. Europe is different than the UK. Fortunately, since I assume you're not taking anything but electronics, like you're not taking your hair dryer with you, right, Jeff?
No, they have a hairdryer in hotel rooms.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, fortunately, pretty much any electronics power supply these days will do anywhere from 100 to 240 without a problem. So you don't need a converter, just the adapter.
Yeah, Joel taught me about that the last time when we went to, actually for Dev Days, I learned that it's just the plug, basically. Most adapters can sort of deal with the different voltages or frequencies or whatever it is.
Yeah. And what I do to avoid packing a lot of stuff is I sort of rely on USB to charge my phones and all the small gear off of a computer. So really, I just have the computer plugged in with my regular power adapter, and then I get the one thing, but any airport will give you one of those.
Yeah, I'll just probably pick that up at the airport. That was the other recommendation.
Shape transformer. Let's see. I'm trying to think about what else. What else is good, important stuff? Oh, you got your passport?
Yeah, of course.
That's really the only thing that if you have a passport and you have a means of paying for things, it's a good. Here's another trick.
Do you know where the U.S. Embassy is?
Right before you leave, use your phone to take a picture of your passport, and then if you ever lose your passport, you've got a picture of it.
Good idea.
Which you can show people.
I'll do that. That's a good idea.
Especially at the embassy.
Yeah. I could take a picture of your passport. And I was like, I'm Joel Spolsky.
That's true.
Yeah, I think they'll notice the difference in the pictures.
Luckily, I have Photoshop with me, so.
If you say Joel Atwood or Jeff Spolsky, they'll find that on the internet anyway.
That's awesome. What did you want to take? That's good. That's good advice. Thank you. That's very helpful. We had a question from the audience. News on Dev Days. I'm sure the answer is none at the moment, but.
Meh. Yes.
I think we want to
stop. I had one of our vendors offer me a refund for money we didn't pay.
Oh, that's cool, because a lot of our vendors just kept $100,000.
I was considering writing her back and being like, sure, this is my bank account number. But then I'm like, nah, I should probably be honest and be all like, which money are you talking about? Because I don't recall paying you anything.
We have to figure out a way to do it cheap, essentially. So do something cheap and lightweight.
So closer to the original format, do you think?
Yeah.
That's what the question is basically asking.
Without traveling, too.
Joel doesn't want to go anywhere.
So I think it's pretty early, but I think to answer the question, yes. I think we're going to return it closer to the spirit of the first one, Joel.
Is right, right. Well, I mean, it was really just, it just got too expensive, so it was too hard a decision for people. We really like being in that sweet spot of one day, $99, and anything we can do to get inside that range makes it actually a doable, workable thing. Right. We also should get our act together in terms of the meetup programs we were going to do.
We talked about that, didn't we?
We'll work on that.
By the way, I'm assuming we've considered the podcast to have officially started at this point. We're not just babbling.
Oh, yeah. No. We started a while ago.
Yeah, podcast episode 25.
Six. Yes.
Six?
Warm start. Six. Warm start.
26.
Yeah. Five was last week. 25 was last week.
Yeah.
By the way, so this was pointed out to me right before we started, but there's a great Twitter status that I will paste into the chat room. Right now, there it is. Basically, that the Stack Overflow moderator election pitches are way better than most of the pitches that we see in real elections.
Yeah. Now, of course, this is a person who's got like a little Charlie Brown with square glasses kind of icon.
But on the upside, there's also no smear campaigns either.
Not yet.
Well, yeah.
If anybody wants to call in to smear their, that leads us to. Oh, this is a person in Denmark. Maybe he'll come see you at OraDev. Ori Mus. Elections are going on. I guess I can cross that off.
I was just giving you an amazing transition.
That was a great segue. It's called segue. We've got more moderate elections going on Stack Overflow. So in all these years, Jeff, we never really found any other site that actually has elections in any way, shape, or form.
It's pretty rare. It was really shocking. And I, unfortunately, I'm going to have to call as much as I like him. Clay Shirky off out by name, because I've mailed him several times about this and I can never get a response.
Yeah, you're just refusing
like,
to tell us.
There's got to be history to this. Like, I refuse to believe we're the only site that sort of has regular election processes on our community sites, but it's really, really hard to find examples of
it's
this.
It's so
They're
strange.
Really rare,
a lot of those
really
sites, like here, let's look up Stacy.
And actually, if anyone on the chat or anyone listening knows of any sites that sort of hold elections, because I was looking for prior art on this to figure out, like, how should we be doing this? And I was shocked to find that I couldn't find hardly anything in terms of prior art and, you know, history of other sites doing this. But I know it has to be out there.
So essentially let's see, Occupy Wall Street. I'm sorry, Google is coming up with nothing. A lot of Occupy Wall Street crap.
Yeah,
as soon as you type elections. sorry.
Well, just it's stuff like I did like moderator elections, stuff like that.
What's weird is that the early bulletin board systems that they had, Echo, Well, what else was there? The Well and Echo, I think, were probably the two of the earliest, were very weird kind of 70s, like whole earth catalog. What's the word I'm looking for? You would think they would be way more democratically oriented, right? Like, they were more, they were kind of utopian, like, you know, they were like little kibbutzim on the internet. And so you'd think they would have elections or something of some sort, just to keep themselves amused. Actually, you know what the truth is? When you go far enough back, people are paying for their presence on those sites. The behavior was much, much better because, for one of two reasons, either because, like on Echo, you're paying for your account, you're not going to behave badly because you will get your account taken away and you will not be allowed to get on it anymore unless you can come up with a different name and rejoin with a different identity, I guess, and a different credit card. And so people's behavior was, I think, probably a little bit better then. But also some of the early chat rooms were all on Prodigy, that crazy dial-up service that was it was a joint venture of IBM and Sears, and they hired companies to moderate the chat rooms. Like they just actually paid entire companies full of people who would sit there and maintain decorum in the chat rooms.
Well, if you go to any sort of random PHPB forum, you will see moderators.
There's definitely moderators there, yeah.
But I think the way almost all sites tend to do it is they just sort of anoint people. They just sort of see who – there's not a formal election process. They do pick people from the community, but it's not this
– Yeah, it's the people that are
election.
There.
It's just, okay, here's a guy or a gal who's on the site all the time and is known to be the source of a lot of high-quality information, and they sort of just anoint them or email them, and then that's it. They just get the position.
And it's the people that are there 24 hours a day.
And to be honest, I mean, we did do that at the very beginning of Stack Overflow, did we not?
Sure.
We just sort of randomly picked people. I remember doing that for Server Fault and SuperUser because we didn't. The catch 22 is when you're starting a new community, it's hard to find those people.
And we still have like ProTem, like we temporarily nominate ProTem moderators from the new Stack exchanges before they have elections.
Yeah, we do. And that's, we pick based on a certain patterns of activity and, you know, gut feeling as well, but. There are certain things we look at. And one thing we should mention for this election, we are refining the election process as we go. We're learning a lot about why elections work, how elections work. Certainly one of the things we learned is the site does have to be a certain size to even support an actual election. We try not to hold elections on sites where we pretty much know the election's going to fail because not enough people will, A, nominate themselves to be elected or B, even vote in the election. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It takes a certain level of participation to even
engagement.
Get there.
Yeah, it's always embarrassing if you hold an election and the number of people who nominate themselves is the same as the number of moderators you wanted to choose.
We've been close to that on a few sites, and Rebecca's done a ton of work on this and really knows the most about it, but we have certain criteria we look at to determine if the site can make it through an election. I don't really have a problem with appointments. I think ultimately sites need to grow anyway. I mean, that's the goal, is for sites to be sustainable, and one thing that makes a site sustainable is that, you know, it eventually gets enough of an audience that it can actually hold an election. I would view that as a major step on the road to independence.
That's an interesting way of looking at it, because if you look at different Stack exchanges based on how large they are and how well established they are, you can see that there's sort of a progression, and there's a lot of a progression in sort of user engagement, and there's a lot of places where you can get stuck that may not be great places. So, for example, one thing I've noticed on certain sites, who will go unnamed, is that if there isn't a strong enough group of people that really care about the site and are on there all the time and have some kind of back channel for talking amongst themselves, then we're getting weird static. Yeah, it's just that weird static.
Yeah,
it's Jeff. Hey, Jeff, are you coming unplugged? Dun, 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 dun. Do, 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 do.
Weird noise on Jeff's
side. Better?
A little bit. Wait, say it again.
Is it better now?
Now it's better.
Okay, sorry. I actually printed something, but I thought I was muted. Sorry.
Oh, that was printing.
My fault. Yeah, that was print. But I didn't physically mute. I just hardware muted. So
it just sounds like
as well.
What's the word I'm looking for? What were we even talking about? Elections. If you have
reaching the threshold.
Yeah,
for elections.
There are a few sites where what happens is that you start to get behavior that's borderline. And I don't mean behavior. I really mean like people start posting questions that don't have answers, or conversational questions, or they start to drift off topic. Like they start talking about, let's say hypothetically that it was a site about startups, for example, and they start talking about getting jobs, which is not really on the subject. And by borderline, I mean, it's not like they went on to the site about startups and started talking about broccoli, because everybody understands that broccoli is off topic for startups. unless you're a broccoli farmer. But it's the stuff that starts to feel like a little bit borderline, and because it's borderline and nobody can agree, and the people that have cloud are not talking amongst themselves. There's no meta. There's no offline. There's no concept of moderators yet, or there aren't very many moderators. That stuff just gets left around. It's like, well, you know, let's just err on the side of liberalism. It must be okay. And that's sort of a broken window phenomenon, which is that attracts more of those similar posts. And pretty soon you have a website where all anybody wants to talk about is how to divide up the equity in their startup, even though I already wrote the damn question about how to divide up the equity in your startup and stop asking that one.
Yeah, I hate to keep harping on Reddit, but you know, having spent time on the Battlefield 3 Reddit, I realized that Reddit is a little bit of a broken system too, and that they get tons of repetition. Like on the Battlefield 3 Reddit, to give you a specific example, this happens many, many times. In Battlefield 3, one of the key things you're supposed to do is spot the enemy. Like when you see the enemy, you press a special key to spot them, so that then whoever, as long as you have line of sight to that person, you'll see them, right? Like even if you didn't see them, they were in the bushes or whatever, you'll sort of see them now because they're lit up on the radar. So it's very essential. So like every day, somebody posts like a little helpful thing. It's like, you got to press Q. Everybody needs to press Q. And it's like select on the Xbox or whatever.
Right.
And like if you've been on the site for more than 3 days, like you're really sick of this. Because, look, I know about Q. I've seen it. I don't need to be here about it every freaking day, right? But repetition is, like, endemic there. It's really right. bad. And did you know there's also a meta on Reddit? The theory of Reddit?
Oh, you mean it's
which
for
I had never found before.
Reddit?
Yeah, basically, it's like, okay, all about how Reddit is supposed to work.
I gotta see this.
Reddit. Yeah, one of the things they're thinking about outlawing, and I think they probably should, is image-only posts. Although, it's tough, because you have a whole site that's built on... predicated on the whole site is predicated on links to other stuff, right? It's not it wasn't built as you post your question. You can do that. You can actually have what they call a self post, which I think is some of the best posts on there.
Yeah, and then it's more like a forum, actually, where just somebody...
It's more like a Q&A. It's more like what we do, actually.
Yeah.
But this idea of this hybrid system where half the time you're posting a link to something else and half the time you're posting, oh, here's my thoughts on, you know, why support class should be changed a certain way. It's an uncomfortable mixture, which is something you brought up, I think, on the last podcast. Of what's difficult is sort of this mixture of these two systems.
I'm trying to remember what I brought up is that when you try to mix things that are quick, little morsels of M&M yumminess with something that you have to read and think about, you don't catch the right
mixture.
People. Yeah.
It's not a comfortable mixture. It really isn't.
People don't want to switch between those two modes. So a lot of times I'll see something that I know I really should read, but I'm looking for funny ha-has, you know, like I got 30 seconds before lunch.
Yeah, it was just amusing to read. And one of the things, the reason I brought that up is the answer on the Battlefield 3 subreddit was that you have to have moderators that are willing to sort of defy the community in this. And this is the power issue of when you have moderators, they have to have the power to say no to the community because the community doesn't always want things that are healthy for it. It's like, oh, let's eat junk food and ice cream all day long. You know, you're like the parents at the point, like, whoa, 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 you don't really want to do that. You know, like, I'm going to have to stop you from eating ice cream every day for a week because you're going to kill yourself, right? You're going to kill the community. And that's why the moderators are so important because they have the vision. They understand, like, what the goal is, maybe a little bit better than sort of the average user does. And they have the power to step in and stop what's happening. Right. Even if it's not popular, like, you know, these popular questions that are now we know are wrong, like, you know, what's your favorite programming cartoon is the most egregious example, but there's more borderline examples of things that are just really opinion questions that don't really belong on Stack Overflow.
Right.
And they go in and shut them down. And this is not a popular activity. I mean, this is why moderators get pushback, but this is also, as you see from the Battlefield 3 example, people are saying the only way this problem can be fixed. And basically, it ruins the site. I mean, it literally ruins the site because when you go to the Battlefield, it's been fixed now, but for a while, when you went to the Battlefield 3 Reddit, it was all just like meme comics. It was just a giant waste of time. The people who love the site were ruining it. And that's why the moderators are so important because they step in and keep the site from destroying itself. I know it sounds crazy. It seems like, oh, you can just fix this with software. Just build the software in a way.
No,
I don't know if you really can. I mean, you can build the software in a way to make it harder to do that. But for people that really want to do this, like they're going to find a way to post their image macro. They're going to do it, and people are going to upvote the crap out of it. It's just the way the world works.
They've been in years and years on Reddit of a problem that the way the software works is the more votes you get, the closer to the more likely you are to get on the homepage, and the higher you are going to be on the homepage, and the higher you're going to stay. And that means that the posts which are the shortest, the easiest, and the fastest to absorb get you back to the site voting most quickly. And so an image is always going to get a lot of votes because it takes 3 seconds to review it. And if you put some kind of Joel on Software article that takes 6 days to read, by the time that people get to the end, that they're not going back to Reddit to vote. And they're going to get far fewer votes. Far more people will drop out during the act of reading that and not come back and vote just because it's taking too long. And so there's an automatic bias on a voting system towards the things that are fast.
And it's not wrong. I mean, this is the way they built the system. And to be fair, we have the same problem.
We do.
Questions get upvoted crazy, even though they really shouldn't. They should be closed as duplicate of the canonical.
What I've noticed is really interesting. David, is your mic on? David's there. On StackExchange.com, the popular questions page, what I've noticed a lot is this phenomenon of a question where everybody knows the answer gets on StackExchange.com. It's like it whatever our hot algorithm is, we seem to trigger it by having somebody ask a question where, like, everybody just knows, like, how do I delete a file in DOS?
Yeah. Well, it takes into account basically questions that get a lot of votes and a lot of views very quickly.
Yeah.
Are considered hotter. So I think with that, it's sort of, you see the question title and you're like, ooh, I know the answer to this. And then you click it.
And so it gets a view.
And then you see the answer and you're like, oh, yeah, that's the right answer. And you upload it.
There's like 15 answers there. Yeah.
And then, so if it gets that stuff fast, then it starts showing up on the homepage and then gets more views from that.
And then,
So that's a hard problem to fix. Everyone has sort of this idea that there's like an ideal, really technical, really interesting question that should be posted on there, but like detecting that algorithmically is just very difficult,
right,
because usually that question is indistinguishable from 10,000 other questions that are way less interesting but got 7 upvotes and 100 views and just from the data's perspective look exactly the same.
I'm trying to think like here's a what is the first day of the Star Wars Advent calendar? And this is, believe it or not, this is not on sci-fi. This is on Lego. What is an advent calendar? All right, so this is, for whatever reason, doing really well. Using a calendar as a desktop wallpaper, that's an Ubuntu question.
Well, I do want to point out that this is definitely going to happen. I mean, my point was all these systems have sort of vulnerabilities where they've built incentive systems that become perverse. And the perverse incentive in this case is post a really easy question with a really easy answer. It doesn't make it wrong. It doesn't make it bad.
No.
And I do want to point out here that we just have to be better than the other stuff on the internet, which I think we still are.
Like, we just have to run faster than the other guys.
You have to run faster than the other sites. And if you look at this Lego question, which is it's not really a bad... It's okay.
No,
it's
none of these are
question.
Bad questions. Some of them are just sort of a little bit too easy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, there's much worse things you could point to on the internet. So it's like David pointed out, I think it's impossible to fix. But I do think that moderation, this idea that, this is why I was kind of excited to talk to Moot, and I guess we'll talk to him in 2 weeks. This idea of anonymous participation, because without moderation, I don't understand how you could. This is an intractable problem. Like, you literally cannot fix it. The community will just rip itself apart.
It seems that way, and yet the extreme anonymity has done
that's
why
I wanted
thing.
To. Yeah, and maybe what happens is just I'm just guessing here. At some point, is magic moderation emerges. Like, the people who see the need for this they take up the mantle and make whatever it is happen.
So my experience with 4chan is that. First of all, it's I think it's more chat than forum, which means that things disappear permanently from the site after a while. I think they're kept in memory, literally. And so there's no such thing as like a permalink to a conversation on 4chan or anything like that, because it's going to be gone in 10 days. And half of what you get is people asking for things that were posted 3 days ago, saying, does anybody remember 3 days ago somebody posted this such and such a thing? I won't describe what kind of thing it is, but it's probably shocking. And, involving a toaster and a dinosaur and they're having sex, all right? The toaster is having sex with a dinosaur.
Sex.
I said it.
I'm shocked.
Anyway. And because it has no memory, you can't, unless somebody downloads it, keeps it. So people do. They download the collections of their exciting sex, dinosaur sex, and keep them in their folders, and then they repost them when asked. So stuff is really flying by very, very, very quickly, which, but it is sort of a race to the bottom, So, for example, if you have a system with zero moderation, you cannot have anybody in that system who gets offended by things that are the most disgusting things imaginable, whatever that may be.
But if it's all temporal, it's a very different scenario.
A little bit, like
you said, if it's chat, then it's just the stream. It's almost a little bit more like Twitter in that, you know, how offensive can it be? It'll just roll downstream.
Right.
You know, in a few minutes, if you don't like what's on the screen, then just wait 3 minutes and then something else comes up. So maybe it's a very different thing because we're trying to create these public artifacts. And Joel, I know you're popular of saying this, but I want to reiterate it because I'm actually using that in a slide in my OriDev presentation, is the idea that sort of a very small percentage of people are creators. Mm-hmm. They're actually creating content, typing stuff in. All you really need to do is satisfy those people, you know, and then the people that are passively participating just need to get enough benefit from sort of drive-by participation, which is a much lower bar.
Right.
So maybe that's the other reason is when it comes to moderation, you really just need to keep the most active participants happy. And that's really, that's fair because that's where your moderators really come from, right? The most active people, some of them want to become moderators to help curate the information. But you're creating these permanent artifacts that are going to be around essentially forever, ideally, right? I mean, like the top question is the mathematics of Tetris. That hopefully will be good forever.
Yeah, that'll be around for a long time.
Yeah. The Tetris isn't going to change. Math isn't going to change.
And that's always going to be interesting to somebody who wasted 10,000 hours of their life. How long does it take to become an expert at Tetris?
Oh, he even used different colors. I didn't know you could do colors in LaTeX or whatever with the math jacks.
Wait, I want to see this now. This sounds really good. The math.
It just uses different colors. That's not shocking. It's just unusual to see colored text on Stack Exchange because we obviously do not allow that normally.
Oh, yeah, look at that. I didn't know LaTeX had colors. Yeah. I guess they must, right? I mean, this shows how long it's been since I used tech. Was when there were only black and white laser printers, and there was never any belief that you could ever have colored text.
Then
how would they print it? It would be like, what? How would you print that? That's impossible. Yeah. I had a weird experience. Somebody who hung around with me when I was 18 put a bunch of pictures up on Facebook from when we were 18, and I'm looking at these pictures and thinking, wait a minute, did they have cameras then? Like, I couldn't figure out how there were pictures on the internet of me when I was 18. Just a little mental gap.
It's very, very, very high tech.
We'll put one in the show notes.
So the Stack Overflow election, a lot of what I've been saying is just to reiterate, like, everything I've learned in the 3 years I've been doing this has taught me that moderation is incredibly important. Like, having good moderation, having a moderation plan, having a moderation strategy, having a way to vet moderators and bring them in the system. And this is a lot of what the community team does, what Robert Carteno's team is sort of
teach the moderators, train
teach
the
moderators sort of the culture of like what we're trying to do with the Q&A and making sure that, you know, they understand it. And they usually do, to their credit. Usually these are people that really get it. They get the mission and understand we're trying to create, you know, people who love a particular topic. We're trying to create these permanent artifacts on the internet that are actually useful and helpful and alive. You can edit them, right? And make them better and re-tag them and all that good stuff. But one thing we have noticed is that another perverse incentive, the election system accidentally was biased towards people that had a lot of reputation. So what we saw, and this is actually, if you go to Meta, I can't look up the post right now, but somebody statistically proved it, that the votes strongly correlated with the amount of reputation the candidate had. In other words, a guy with 100,000 reputation got more votes than a guy or gal with 50,000 reputation.
Now that a part of that may just be the people actually know more likely to know that person. Like there's a higher probability that person has answered your question or you have seen them answering other people's questions.
But there's some basis for it, but it's too strong. Like essentially it overrides all other concerns like, gee, does this person seem like temperamentally they would be a good match? Because I do think temperament wise, you want somebody that's fairly even keeled and doesn't sort of go
rage
off on
delete
people.
Their own posts.
right, and sort of can see the other person's position and just is, I don't know, there's a certain wiseness you need to be a moderator, and not everybody necessarily has that. But we did add some criteria. So to improve this, to keep it from being just a race to the top of whoever has the most reputation, which is unfortunately, to be honest with you, what tends to happen, we added some criteria to the election. You have to have certain badges, like deputy, which means you've actually dealt with flagging to some degree and built up a flag weight of a certain level, so you understand how flagging works, because that's an essential, and that's probably the number one thing that we want moderators to do is look at flags and figure out, why do these flags work? What are these flags about? Civic duty, meaning they voted 300 times. You have to be able to vote In other words, be an election, you must vote yourself. What are some of the other requirements? I'd have to look at the thing, but those are the big ones to me, was deputy and I think it's drunk and white, which means they've edited a lot of posts. You can go to stackoverflow.com. There's currently a banner.
Stackoverflow.com/election is the site. There's also, I just discovered this. What the heck is this? Elections.stack?
Oh, meta participation. How can I forget that? Okay, of course. The most important one, well, maybe not most important, but equally important, is you've actually been on the meta. Because meta is the governance site, right? Like, we had a lot of people sort of running the election that they had never touched meta.
So they'd never engaged in any conversations over how the site should work.
Right, exactly. That's crazy. It's like, well, how can you run?
Right.
I mean, it's like somebody running for president of the United States from their home. It's like, well, have you run? Have you been governor of Texas? That's usually how we do it here in the U.S.
Right.
Right. You got to be governor of Texas, and
or
then we elect
star.
You.
Or a movie star. Yeah.
Or a movie star, and then you get elected.
Yeah.
But we added, if you go to stackoverflow.com/election, we added meta participation as one of the key stats right next to the user's name. So, but on top of that, we do require these badges be present on the users. And already from the candidates, I think we're getting some really excellent candidates. Nobody that I have reservations about. I'm scrolling at the moment. I normally don't share my preferences, but I will say that in
some
of the...
No, don't do that. I got in trouble in college for doing that.
Okay. Yeah. But everybody looks good. Let me just say that. Everybody looks quite good.
They're all awesome. We got some great people. We got some people that... a lot of names that I recognize. They're being shown with their meta reputation?
Meta counts. How many questions?
I see the meta counts, but is this their Stack Overflow reputation that's showing up on, or their meta reputation?
It's the number of upvotes those questions and answers have received.
Beneath their name.
Yeah, that's the reputation on Stack Overflow.
On Stack Overflow, not meta reputation.
No, not on Stack. Meta. No.
Okay, yeah.
The only thing we show for meta is question and answer count and total votes, not meta reputation.
Okay, got it.
But we're just still figuring this out, like what actually does make, you know, a good moderator. And the badge requirements that you're seeing are a big piece of that.
Right.
We're trying to resist this common pitfall of whoever has the most reputation tends to get the most votes, which is depressing but very, very true.
Right.
And that's, again, when you build these incentive systems, that's what happens. You know, you have to think you've built a system so strong that it causes sort of sometimes bad things to happen.
Well, yeah, I don't know if that's I don't want to say it's a bad thing, because honestly, what we know that reputation really correlates with is just time on the site. It's just how active you've been for how long and how involved you've been for how long.
It's
how engaged
not bad.
You are.
It's not bad, but it's not the whole story. You know, it's
no, but it does
not
also
even remotely the whole story.
Yeah, there will be lots of exceptions, but it will also correlate with a lot of things like people like how many people recognize your name, which is also not a good thing. But that's what wins the presidential elections, right? Name recognition and certainly people
how
go into the. It is there are actually elections today. It is the second Tuesday, first Tuesday in November that follows a Monday. And so there are actually elections in the United States going on right now. I did not vote, mainly because I don't even know. It's one of those off years where it's like dog catcher and family court deputy sheriff judge. Comptroller, exactly. They control the comps. I hope they don't control computer. I don't know.
Isn't that like sort of...
I feel like I'm
auditor. They're in charge of money.
I feel like I'm neglecting my duty by not voting today in elections that I don't know anything about for candidates that I've never heard of, because I would just go in there and I'd be like, yeah, that guy sounds good.
Yeah, no, it's better to not
vote for
them. If you don't know what is going on and who these people are, it's better to just not vote.
It's better just to leave it to the professionals who read the newspaper every day and listen to WNYC, NPR, and know who to vote for.
Yeah,
because they've listened to the four week long series leading up to the elections that Leonard Lopate has done, talking to all the candidates and asking them questions about all the issues that are important. So the people that listen to that go vote today. Awesome. They get more. Their votes are more worth more because I opted out.
Everyone else, just do what you do every other election. Stay home.
Yeah. Or just go.
That's
and
good,
just
advice.
Vote,
good advice.
Vote the
Alex.
Democratic slate. Click, click, click.
Do
click.
What you usually do.
Vote in the Stack Overflow election where I actually know and care about the people.
That's right. I'm looking at the Wikipedia entry for comptroller. Apparently, it's supposed to be pronounced controller, which doesn't make sense. Also, the Jimmy Wales faces are back, so I just want to warn anyone that is scared by the face of Jimmy Wales that...
Oh, not to go to Wikipedia for a few months.
This is like the public radio, you know, money drives. Yeah. Like you have to stare down at Jimmy Wales. He's staring into your soul, you know?
Last topic for today. We got... David on here. David, you're doing some kind of a Skyrim, all right, some kind of nerd gaming. Kind of nerd off.
Yeah, well, tell us I don't about know that. About nerd off, but so yeah, so we're doing this promotion on the gaming site. So basically, so we've done this in the past where we did a little bit of an event around game launches because we know that gaming's a little bit unique from our other sites and that it has these big releases fairly often. And the cool thing about new releases is that nobody ranks for those Google search results yet. And there's a lot of information that's just not on the internet. So turns out we're really good at kind of getting that information up quickly and answering people's questions as soon as they get the game.
There is, like, whatever game just came out today, if you ask the question about why, like how to get past level whatever, that question is not on Google yet because nobody's gotten to that level yet. And so if we can get an answer in there, Google indexes us frequently, we're very likely to get a lot of, you know, we get a fairly canonical answer for that.
Right. So we're looking at the, so it's kind of right now is prime game release season, the kind of the weeks leading up to Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And so we're looking at the releases and we wanted to do a big promotion. So we're looking at the list and we, there's a game called coming out called Elder Scrolls V Skyrim. So we were looking at that and thinking we want to do something about that because it fits our audience really well on the gaming site. Because it's a piece, it's, well, it's on all platforms, but it's mostly PC and it's kind of an RPG and that's what the people we have tend to play.
Mm-hmm.
So we're planning on doing a thing around that. And, it was actually, Sean, our new designer, who really challenged me on that and was like, this is ridiculous. Call of Duty is coming out the same week and it's, sells 100 million times as many copies. How can we not do something on the gaming site for this game?
Yeah.
So I was like, no, you don't understand. First person shooters don't do that well on the site because there's not that many questions to ask.
Hey, I asked a question on it. I got answers to Call of Duty questions on gaming.
I know. And this is kind of the, this is kind of the conventional wisdom that a lot of people have been saying. And finally I decided, oh, fine. All right. He wrote me an email and I was like, all right, I'm gonna prove him wrong once and for all. I'm going to go look at the stats. I'm going to tell him what the deal is. And so I went and I pulled it up for Black Ops, Call of Duty Black Ops, which came out last year.
That's where I got help because I was stuck in this level where, like, and basically if you don't know the trick, you're going to be stuck there forever.
Yeah. And I pulled it up and I look at it and it's got 130 questions and like 250,000 views. I was like, oh, crap.
Pretty
that's pretty decent.
That's almost the population of Albuquerque right there.
That's actually pretty good. And I was like, oh. And the game I wanted to compare it to was The Witcher 2, which came out in like the spring and we had this big promotion and got tons of views. And that game got 138 questions and 500,000 views. So twice as many views, but about the same number of questions. I was like, wow, all right, maybe I'm just wrong here. What if we should, maybe we should do the Modern Warfare promo? And then we had the brilliant idea of doing like a face-off between the two games, like making them fight to the death. So that's what we ended up with. So the promo is Skyrim versus Modern Warfare 3. And you can go there, Skyrim versus
VSMW3.com
or just go to gaming.stackexchange.com and you'll notice it right away.
We've done the whole, like we've changed the whole background image on gaming.stackexchange.
So it's pretty cool. We got this really cool design from Sean again and we changed the background on the gaming site. Nothing else because we didn't want to go too crazy. We still wanted to feel like the same site. Like I don't want people to be confused. But there's a site message. If you click that, it'll take you to the event site. It launched last night because Call of Duty came out today. And so we're doing this big event, this big contest around it where we're trying to see which game gets the most views on the site. We're doing views because we think that that basically reflects how many people found this useful on the internet because the views mostly come from, you know, 90% of views come from Google. And if we get a lot of views, that means we helped a whole lot of Google people.
Mm-hmm.
So we're giving them each 7 days to get as many views as they can, and then we'll declare a winner and give out some cool prizes to everyone who kind of helped that game win, and some consolation prizes to the game that lost.
Sweet. Okay.
Well, there is some... Well, going back to your first-person shooter, it is true that... I mean, there's no way a first-person shooter is as complex as an RPG. I mean, they're just very, very different kind of games. But I was surprised, for example, like in Battlefield, because there's so many sandboxy things that go on. That's just totally undocumented. There's wholly undocumented areas of that game. Like, and you can take things like, so the engineer has this little robot he can use to remote control, like defuse bombs or repair stuff. It's like a remote engineer. And somebody was putting C4 on the robot in the beta. And I was like, I never even thought of that. They would put C4 on the robot and then drive it in and blow it up like a mobile bomb. And they were doing the same thing to the mobile. There's a mobile air unit that can sort of spot units, like a little drone that you can drive around. They would put C4 on the drone, fly it around and blow it up. And I mean, sandboxy stuff that happens. So
cool.
I think you can have elements like that in a first person shooter, but I mean,
I would be shocked if Call of Duty won this particular contest, because RPGs are just way more confusing and way more complicated than shooters, even a complex shooter like Battlefield, sandbox shooter, if you will.
I think it's true. I mean, I personally think Skyrim's going to win, but on the other hand, the other realization that I had was, gaming is different than Stack Overflow. It's not as long-tail-y. There are fewer questions, but they get more views. I wrote a blog post about this, because basically...
My stupid question about Angry Birds 3-15 is still famous.
Yeah,
famous.
So it's pretty common on gaming to see a question that got, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 views. That's not that uncommon. And basically that's because, there's less questions, but they're more focused, because a lot of people are playing these games.
Yeah.
Right. There's just millions of people playing these games, and they all have the same question. They get to the same level, and they can't beat the same boss, and they all ask the question.
They got 164,000 views by our crappy count on one level of Angry Birds. It's insanity.
Right. So that's the thing. So that's the thing with Call of Duty, right? I could see Call of Duty could win with the one right question. If we got the one question that everybody has as soon as they log on, that could get 100,000 views in a couple days and win the contest. So I think it's kind of interesting. It's kind of a fun contest. What's that one question that everybody is going to have that's not documented somewhere on the internet?
Sure. As long as views is a factor, that's important. So
yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, so that's why we decided to go with views. Originally, I had something more complicated where it was views plus questions plus voting, but...
Minus your name.
Everyone yelled at me because I was too complicated.
What you do is you translate your name into Hebrew, and then you use the gematria numeric value of your name in Hebrew.
Yes, that's exactly what we were going to do. But then we decided to do this simpler thing where it's just views.
Yeah. Let me just see. We haven't had any...
Oh, and we're having a party on Friday. We should talk about that.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, tell us about the party.
Joel won't be there.
So. I'm going to be at a wedding.
Well, we're gonna throw a launch party in New York. So anybody who's in New York can send an email to... If you're a gamer, send an email to teamplusgaming@stackexchange.com. And we have a limited number of invites for community members.
Some small number of people.
But if you're not in New York, we're going to be live streaming in. It's going to be cool. We're going to have I think the plan is to have 10 different systems set up playing Call of Duty and Skyrim.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I play one now? Do we have
We have Modern Warfare. That's what they're... So you just made a face because we heard them screaming in the conference room. what is going on? They're throwing a party in there. They're playing Modern Warfare. It came out last night.
Oh, man. Are they playing... do you think they're playing campaign mode? Probably not.
They're playing multiplayer. I'm sure. Anyway,
but how is that any
apparently
different
it's
than
a fun
previous
game.
Games? If they...
They tweaked a few things.
Yeah,
I mean it's basically the same. It's just the next iteration. I mean, the last game came out only a year ago. How much could they have changed in a year? So it's not that much. It's just they tweaked some things, they fixed some things, they added some new, cool, special. So the big thing in the last one was the kill streaks, right? The more kills you get in a row without dying, you unlock superpowers, basically. You get this one thing where if you got 20 kills in a row, you're all of a sudden you can activate this thing where you're flying around in a helicopter shooting everybody. I'm in the helicopter and nobody can shoot back at you, right? But it only lasts for a minute or two or something, so you get a whole bunch of kills. Anyway, that was the big thing in the last version. That's big again in this one, except they changed it to be point streaks instead of kill streaks, so you get credit for helping your teammates and stuff like that instead of just being a kill fest.
Got it.
Anyway, very boring unless you're a video gamer.
I'm going to go ask some questions. Well, I do play that game, but for whatever reason, I never play the multiplayer versions. I'm like the I like to play
the guy who only plays the campaign.
What they call the campaign mode, because there's a story there and it's fun. In the basement.
Well,
it's
got a new campaign.
I don't have to scream at some 14-year-old.
I played the first 15 minutes of it and it was fun.
Yeah. I usually like the campaign, believe it or not. But the truth is they've just gotten too easy. It's just okay, kill them. I can make them harder, but then they just take longer.
Well, one of the beefs with the previous on the Call of Duty Black Ops was the intro sequence, which is some historical segment where you're trying to kill Castro, some crazy alt history thing. There's a video on YouTube of a guy, he never presses the fire button. He just watches the whole time and he makes it through that whole sequence. You don't have to fire a single bullet. the criticism for some of the campaign stuff. It's basically a giant cutscene that, it feels interactive, but it's kind of a lie. That's why I like Battlefield, because it is a sandbox. There's 10 different ways to sort of, not in the campaign, to be fair, and the campaign has the same problems.
Right.
But in the multiplayer, there's 10 different ways to kill someone. If you're hiding behind a wall, I'm going to blow up the wall. Because I can do that in Battlefield, and you can't really hide, and the bots, and there's just so many different cool strategies. It's very sandboxy. You don't feel like you're trapped in a cutscene, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the, but the cut, trapped in a cutscene feeling is not a good one.
Do you remember the original, like one of the very early Call of Duties? I don't remember which one it was. Maybe the third or the fourth. And this is a huge spoiler, but I think it might have been
Is this modern or were they in World War II still?
Modern. This is the first modern warfare.
There's only three, so
this is Call of Duty Modern Warfare, the original one, which was which is Call of Duty 4, I believe, right?
Yes.
Technically, yeah. And can I do spoilers? Listen, this is the end of the podcast, so
it's been a long time.
It's been a long time,
so,
dude.
Statute of limitations.
It was the first video game I ever played where you just die, like you have to die. It was amazing.
Oh right, that was the first Modern Warfare. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I
ruined it for David. No, but I mean,
shooters aren't really my thing. I don't really play. I mean, I'll play them a little bit online, but I don't play through the campaigns.
This one, like, no matter how you played it, you died, and you actually had the experience of dying because you actually controlled several characters. The game was able to go on, but it was sort of really, really interesting. It was like, what the heck is going on here?
That's like Final Fantasy VII for RPG players. Mm-hmm. Had the same experience. Yeah. This is the biggest spoiler of all time. That's the first time you play all these RPGs,
all the
and it's
now. Yeah.
It's like your characters never die. That's like one of the rules of all these games, right? It's like if they die, you just reload, or you know you just bring them back to life after the battle. Or
but here it's like, look, dude. But this is one where like a character. That's it.
Yeah, a character permanent. This was Final Fantasy VII. A character permanently dies, and this was like a huge shocker for the entire gaming world.
You know, that's like 2.5 men.
Yes, it was a lady character that you liked a lot, and she was very nice.
It's like Two
and
a Half
she
Men.
She died.
The main character. And he just died.
David, I played that game and I was a little glad that she died, to be honest.
She was a little annoying. Yeah,
she was a little annoying.
I could see that. But it was shocking, right? I mean,
it was.
Didn't see it coming.
Okay, so go to gaming.stackexchange.com and click on the link. We're kind of out of time because Jeff has to go to the airport, pack his bags, go to the airport.
Right.
So I'm going to call to a close. You've been listening to Stack Exchange Podcast, episode 25?
Six.
26?
26.
Any other promos? We should just put up a sign with a number that I can look at anytime during the podcast.
Do you want to just do a paper sign, or should we get like really nice
LED
monitor? And
you know what? Go to Citarella and steal the thing where you pull the paper tickets and they have an LED sign with a number. That's exactly what we need. Is one of those signs that has a number for the fish store.
You can get them on eBay.
Okay. Yeah.
So podcast 26.
Let's go with 26. Jeff is on his way to Aura Dev in Malmo. Tickets might still be available if you're anywhere near the Scandinavia region. He's going to be giving a talk there with Mark. Is Mark involved in your talk, or is he just speaking at the same conference?
Yes, he is. In fact, he's pretty much ghost giving my other talk.
Awesome. So Mark Revell is going to be carrying Jeff's water in
one of the sessions.
Scandinavia. That'll
not
be awesome.
Keynote.
Not the main keynote.
But it's a technical session, so it's actually better for Mark to go in depth with some of the stuff he's written.
Great.
So there's going to be like a very technical session and then sort of the general keynote session. And it is a new presentation, by the way, so it won't be the one you've seen before. So.
Oh, okay. That's impressive. I gave the same one for 4 years and nobody noticed.
Well, exactly. And, it's a lot of work putting together a new presentation, just FYI.
Next week, the Podfather. I was about to say Adam Curry. Dave Weiner. Sorry, the Podfather. Dave Weiner will be live and in the studio. With us, talking about RSS, talking about identity. He's working on a spec. I hope he's still working on it, some kind of spec for some kind of federated login identity. Who the heck knows, but it'll be interesting. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.